Welcome everyone to episode 201 of the Reds Unrestricted podcast. I'm your host David Comerford and I'm joined by Mark Quaker for the match reaction as Liverpool draw 1-1 with Manchester City in the Premier League.
This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
So it's Man City who took the lead at Anfield in this top of the table Premier League clash, which we've all been very nervous for all week. John Stones midway through the first half from a corner. But Liverpool flew out of the blocks the second half and Alexis McAllister scored a penalty about 5 minutes into it. And it finished 1-1, but it was a game with massive chances at both ends. And both teams might think if certain moments had gone their way that they'd be walking away with a massive result. As it is, it's Arsenal who finished the weekend on top. They obviously beat Brentford 2-1 on Saturday. So they were top coming into this. They are ahead of Liverpool on goal difference. There's a 7 better at the moment, 46 compared to 39. And then Man City are right there on 63, 1 point behind. Obviously, City play Arsenal after the international break. Liverpool will play Brighton. So there's a chance that when those two go head-to-head, Liverpool will be top of the Premier League, but they've got to take care of business as well. So with that in mind, Mark, I'll come to you and just your thoughts on what that result means for the title race, because I suppose knowing that City and Arsenal are about to play each other is a very important contextual detail for all of this.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. It's a bit mixed feelings after the game day, because a point, for example, for Liverpool, obviously before kickoff, when you're seeing sort of the team lineup, and even in the way that the sort of first half plays out, I think the majority of people would have taken a point because of the circumstances around it. But that's also sort of tempered by the fact you knew that if Liverpool are to go on and win the league, you know, they can't be relying on others to beat Manchester City, for example, and take points off them. So essentially, in the back of your mind, you'd also felt that Liverpool would potentially need to win the game in terms of giving themselves that buffer of points above Manchester City, and Arsenal going into the lax fixtures. And also with the way the sort of game panned out, I think Klopp made a reference in his interview that it was potentially the best half that Liverpool have played against Manchester City. And I think I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, I thought Liverpool in that second half, I mean, taking into account the circumstances, but even if you take the circumstances out of the game, I felt Liverpool were absolutely outstanding. And it's not often that you can say they are the dominant force within the game, or you can say that anytime anyone plays Manchester City. But I felt Liverpool were and could and potentially should have gone on to win the game with how they played the second half and the opportunities they had. So you just feel like a little bit of a mixed feelings coming away from the game in relation to, I suppose, the title race. I mean, it just essentially, for me, just leaves it wide open, really, because Arsenal are going to Manchester City the next game. I don't think anything's been decided. And I think any of the three teams can go on and win the league from this point. I think that's what sort of the result's done.
Yeah, it's, you know, we've obviously seen this title race, seen Liverpool and Man City on a couple of occasions where both teams have surpassed 90 points. Liverpool have lost out on both occasions, but they've been historic title races in their own ways. This one is also going to be historic, but it's because you've got kind of three teams going for it, and it's been a long, long time, obviously, since we saw it go to the wire with three different sides in there. And just imagine if it goes to the final day and all three can still win it. It'd be unbelievable, really. But I think you kind of sum it up there, Mark, in the sense that it's weird when you draw a game, the better you play, the worse you feel. And I think, like, you know, you mentioned looking at the team sheets beforehand and maybe the league table to a degree, you thought draw would be the worst result. And to be honest, I think it's strange sometimes because beforehand you're like, oh, we have to sort of take this opportunity to put the distance between us. But almost when you see how exhausting the game is, you're just kind of relieved to come away not having lost when it gets to the end and you need to take a moment. So it's hard to kind of assess, really. I suppose it's good that we've not sort of jumped on the podcast straight after the final whistle today, and there has been a little bit of time to sort of let it set. I think the difficulty is that Liverpool, obviously, you know, you talk about that second half, and we'll get into it in a bit more detail shortly, but in that period, it felt like Liverpool had Man City on the ropes. And if I had to sum that game up in three words, I'd probably say no knockout punch, because there's this saying that they talk about in in basketball all the time when a team is like up by sort of 10, 15 points within the game and they say, you know, don't play with your food, you know, knock them out of the game now, finish them off while you can. Otherwise, it's going to come back to bite you. Liverpool obviously didn't go on and concede another goal or anything like that, so they weren't made to pay in that sense. But I don't know, it was just that period in the game where Man City were rattled and you just couldn't really believe what you were watching from them. You just can't help but rue that in a way. Having said all of that, and not really landed on a clear verdict regarding the title race, I think I do feel more confident about Liverpool's chances than I did before this weekend, even though they dropped down a place in the league. And the reason is because they've just played the team who have to be considered the best in the country and the best in Europe until proven otherwise. You know, they are the treble holders. And they've played them without pretty much half of their first 11. And in the second half, they've absolutely bossed them. And I think there's a feeling among certain Arsenal fans, certain Man City fans, that Liverpool have almost gatecrashed the title race this year. They weren't really meant to be in there, coming off a rebuild, etc., and that they've been lucky in certain games. I think they showed today that when they're on it, they are the best team in the league, even with, obviously, all those players unavailable. So, overall, feel slightly better, but also there's a world in which we rue the missed chances within that game as well. So let's break it down in a little bit more detail. And we'll start with the first half, which was much more even than the second. How did you see it, Mark?
Yeah, I thought Manchester City were the better team, Dave. I think it caused Liverpool a problem with the position and the players in midfield. And it's not new sort of from Manchester City, but obviously with City having four in there with John Stones, when Alexis and Szoboszlai had pressed Stones and Rodri, essentially what De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva were doing behind was splitting Endo in half. So De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva were taking up sort of pocket positions, but wide positions. And essentially they were finding pockets of space in behind Liverpool because Liverpool, what they really needed to do was jump one of their players from full-back position to be able to deal with one of them players. But Liverpool, you can understand, and this is the way Manchester City do it, is them fullbacks were getting pinned by the two wide players in Julian Alvarez and Phil Foden on the other side. So they were caught in between what they should do. The only other option Liverpool had was for one of the centre-backs to jump out and deal with that extra player as well. And I think we've seen that flip in the second half in terms of how Liverpool did that, with one of the fullbacks either coming inside to deal with that threat, or often Van Dijk had jumped one sort of unit of the team to be able to do that. Whereas in the first half, that 4v3 and the actual width that Manchester City incorporated into that by splitting them, De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva, splitting Endo in half, I felt it really caused Liverpool a problem. And there was opportunities for De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva where it was essentially a 2-against-1 against Liverpool's fullback, and you felt that Liverpool were vulnerable and out of character, really. But there was opportunities where De Bruyne has actually got into really good positions on either side, and the opportunity to sort of pick out the pass and wasn't able to do so. So I felt that that was Liverpool's biggest problem. They were sort of on the back foot in terms of possession. They sort of caught in between Manchester City's shape. That didn't allow them to pressure the ball. Essentially allowed Manchester City to dominate possession and get into really good areas to try and hit Liverpool. And Liverpool's only real success came from when they sort of bypassed Manchester City's pressure, because Liverpool were really struggling to play out from the back. We know what City do. City sort of elevate one of their midfield players, normally Kevin De Bruyne, to sit on one of the other centre-halves. And then pressing a 4-4-2 shape, which meant that Liverpool then had to go long. And the only real success they had was Kelleher going long to Darwin Nunes, and then Liverpool sort of getting bodies around that. So I felt they really struggled a little bit in that first half, and City had areas in which they could have sort of extended the lead during that period, albeit they only scored from a set play in the end.
Yeah, I think the direct attacks worked quite well, obviously, with the spacing behind. But also, I thought there was a few moments where Conor Bradley got into space down the right-hand side. And Liverpool, I think, played some quite nice switches out to him, and they didn't get anything out of it because the final ball wasn't quite right in the situation right at the end of the half, where Bradley should have had a shot instead of pulling the ball back as well. That looked like a potential outlet for Liverpool. In the end, the goal did actually kind of come down that side with the header from Ake, but it wasn't quite the same scenario. Liverpool, the first sort of 10-15 minutes of the game were quite worrying, I think. And, you know, that trend that you mentioned of De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva and Foden as well, finding space in those pockets, kind of started there and continued really for the whole half. And you start to think that's not really a sustainable situation. And like you say, the goal comes from a set play. I don't have too many qualms with it. I think it's one of them where you've got to just sort of hold your hands up and say it's clever from City. I think sometimes in football, there's this thing of any set piece goal against is a cardinal sin. And granted, a lot of the time, you know, you're losing the marker and there is poor organisation. But I think to a degree as well, the level of detail that goes into this set piece preparation now, you are just going to fall victim to that at times. And people see it as like something so fundamental and basic, but top teams now are sort of really making the most of them, revolutionising them, and they're key parts. I mean, we see how many Arsenal have scored, Liverpool have had them as a big weapon for a long time as well. So I don't necessarily just look at a set piece and think, oh, you can't have that as the goal that you concede. I think maybe the discourse around that needs to evolve a bit. So City, I think at that stage, it was hard to argue that they didn't deserve the lead. Liverpool came back into it quite well. Best chance probably Szoboszlai from the Elliott cross. Maybe doesn't get the technique quite right on that one, puts it over. But the thing I thought City were doing well in terms of nullifying Liverpool was Diaz couldn't really get into the game. Nunez could have got into the game, but he was obviously going too early with his runs, and I think he ended up matching the offside record today for a single Premier League game. So a bit too eager from him. But yeah, certainly, I think it was probably sort of 55-45 in City's favour as the teams walked off at half-time. But broadly, I felt pretty good about how Liverpool had done with the absentees they had. Little did I know that they were about to produce one of their best halves of the season. Only one goal and one point to show for it in the end mark. But you've already touched on sort of how impressed you were by that. Do you think that there's any other team in the world who can do to Man City what Liverpool did in that period?
Yeah, it's difficult to say, Dave, because we don't often see anyone sort of be able to sort of be the dominant force against Manchester City. They're normally able to monopolise the ball, even if it means switching the positions of the players to be able to do so and have that sort of territorial advantage. But they were just sucked into an absolute pressing trap from Liverpool, and the amount of times that Liverpool turned the ball over, like I said, sort of Liverpool having that bravery to push one of the players inside and steal possession so often and sort of condense the pitch down to one side, so that when Liverpool were able to steal possession, the players were in such close proximity to each other that then they could counter-attack and get into really good areas. And we've seen on multiple occasions that Liverpool had the opportunity to go on then and win the game. And yeah, I don't often see that sort of lack of control from Manchester City. And yeah, you'd be hard-pressed to find a half in which Manchester City have been. I mean, I think actually there was a game against Aston Villa earlier in the season where Manchester City showed signs of that sort of thing happening to them. But you could probably count on one hand the number of times down the years you've been able to say that. I mean, even when Liverpool were in the peak, Liverpool were largely, don't get me wrong, sometimes they could go punch for punch with City, but that was within periods of games. I think that was a complete 45-minute performance from me. I know they had the opportunity from Doku at the end, but essentially Liverpool were the, you know, in terms of the field tilt, the territory, Liverpool just looked like the dominant side. And yeah, you don't often see that too.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how much they had City on the ropes, like I said before. And I think there's two sides to this. I mean, I've said multiple times this season, whether it's on here or elsewhere, that this City team is not as good as the previous title winning team that they've had. You can see that there's more vulnerabilities there. Probably been more change kind of in the team than there has been in previous years as well, in terms of a few players leaving and things like that. And I think there's no way Liverpool, I mean, this isn't the best version of Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, and there's no way that they're doing that to previous Manchester City teams. You're just never going to be able to wrestle that much control of the game from them. So I think that's part of it, and that obviously bodes well for the rest of the title race, because it suggests that there's weaknesses there for other teams to exploit against Man City. Having said that, I mean, I just can't speak highly enough of how well Liverpool were playing in that period with all the absentees they had. I mean, like I said before, they have to be recognised for me as the best team in the world. Liverpool had only shaded the possession with 53%, but 1.95 XG against 0.42. And part of that is a penalty, but it's a penalty Liverpool. You know, they forced the error. They end that XG, if you like. 12 shots against 3 is probably the biggest differential there. And 3 big chances for Liverpool in that period. City have only lost one of the last 77 games where they've gone ahead in the Premier League. And they were so close today to sort of breaking that streak. And that just goes to show you, I think, that Liverpool were teetering on the edge of doing that is a reflection of how delighted Klopp will be with everything except obviously that final finish and Luis Diaz being the main source of culprit there. But, you know, it's probably up there in a way, especially given the absentees and stuff, with that half Liverpool played against City at Wembley a few years ago where they ended up 3-0 up and they probably could have scored the same amount of goals in this half. That game, I remember City fans weren't happy because Guardiola made quite a few changes and the balance probably more in Liverpool's favour with the actual 11s on the pitch. Here it was definitely in City's favour. I saw Andrew Beasley say on Twitter that it was the highest paid 11 ever fielded in the Premier League or something like that. So that just, you know, shows you that the calibre of players Liverpool are up against today. And to dominate in the manner that they did, I think has to go down as some of the best football they've played all season. And I was in awe of it at times. And it was really sort of, it really captured you. But again, obviously it won't be remembered maybe all that fondly because it didn't lead to the victory that obviously all Liverpool fans were hoping for. And, you know, it is fair to say that City had their moments. Keller makes a great save from Foden, gets out quickly to deny him. Doku hits the post. Foden hits the bar in inverted commas, obviously with the touch from Keller. So there were a couple of instances where you like Liverpool could be made to pay for not taking those opportunities. But I thought it was so close to a perfect second half. And, you know, to answer the question I asked you in a way, Mark, I would say, you know, the two teams, having watched a bit in the Champions League as well, you know, it would probably be Arsenal and Real Madrid that people would put forward as kind of the other, you know, two teams outside of Liverpool and City in that sort of best in Europe discussion at the moment, I would say. And I just don't see either of them being able to do that. We'll obviously see how Arsenal get on away from home against City in a few weeks' time. Bit of controversy as ever, seems to be a bit of a theme in this fixture, a bit of a theme in the Premier League generally. At the end of the game, high boot from Doku on McAllister, takes the ball first, but then catches him quite clearly in the chest. VAR checks it for quite a lengthy period, but in the end, there's sort of no on-field review and play resumes. How did you see that incident, Mark?
Yeah, still can't believe it now, Dave. I just still can't believe it hasn't been given. I mean, at the time, I mean, it happens pretty quickly, so you need to have another look at it. And as soon as I seen the replay, I was just waiting. I was actually celebrating the fact that Liverpool were going to get a penalty kick. I felt it was that obvious. And when the referee then pointed to sort of the corner flag, I still can't get my head around it. And I must be living on a different planet because I think I was listening to the guests in the studio, Carragher, etc., who were all sort of arguing the point that they didn't think it was enough for a penalty. I couldn't disagree more. It doesn't matter that it's Liverpool who are the team playing. I mean, it's a stonewall penalty. I mean, if it's anywhere else on the pitch, it's a yellow card and a free kick. I think, like we've often talked about before, and I've talked about sort of VAR getting involved, I think, you know, that human sort of inclination to not get involved if they don't have to and see what sort of reason or rationale they can give to not give such a big decision or intervene at such a big decision at such a big moment, obviously with it being the last minute of the game. But I'm struggling to see what reason they could give for not doing that at that moment in time. I just think that they haven't had the bravery to make that decision. That's the only reason I could give it, because I believe it's that clean cut. I mean, it's into his chest. He's got his studs up. I know he gets a piece of the ball, but it's a foul. There's no other way to describe it. And I think it just leaves a little bit of a bad taste in the mouth, because as well as Liverpool have played, for them to get to that stage where you just believe that unequivocally it's a penalty kick and Liverpool should be having the chance to be able to score the goal from the spot in the last minute of the game, it does just make you feel a little bit deflated, because ultimately I'm not one for blaming referees. I'm not a person who sort of focus on referee decisions that much. But I felt that is an absolutely terrible decision, and it's a stonewall penalty. There's no other way I can look at it, Dave.
And people are rightly pointing out as well that with the Odegaard handball in the game against Arsenal, with the Diaz non-offside against Spurs, with how tight the title race looks set to be this season, you don't want it to be the case, but it increasingly looks like it will be, that those referee decisions could be a bit of a difference maker, and that would obviously be almost the worst thing. I mean, in terms of what can decide title races, probably refereeing decisions, incorrect refereeing decisions at the top, and then injuries in terms of what you don't want to be, that kind of decisive factor. But it is becoming a bit of a pattern for Liverpool. Just to kind of stay on that for a second, so you think that with it being the last minute at Anfield, biggest Premier League game of the season so far, you know, just the magnitude of the occasion, is there an element there they've essentially just, for want of a better phrase, it bottled it, really, because they understand the ramifications if they give a penalty there?
Yeah, listen, it's always hard to sort of guess the mindset of someone, but I can't see it being anything else, Dave, because like I've said before, I mean, the human reaction for people is to not try and get involved in decisions if they don't have to. That's sort of how we're programmed, I suppose. But on that particular one, I just can't see how you don't at least send the referees to the monitor, because it's got, in terms of, you know, everything you would look for in terms of a foul. Is it high? Is his stud showing? It's gone into his chest. I don't understand the rationale behind it. And the only thing I can think is that they've sort of, in that moment, froze and thought, okay, he's got a touch on the ball with his studs, and just sort of tried to not make that decision. I can't see it any other way. I mean, I don't know what you think, Dave, but I can't. I always try and think of a rationale. So you brought up like two incidents there in previous games. The Luis Diaz one, we know, we've heard the audio, we can see it's literally an incident in which the wrong decision's been given. You can see they've frozen, haven't been able to intervene, and then essentially they know they've made a mistake. So I can see that. That's a human mistake. I totally, you know, I can see how that's happened, because we've heard the audio. Even with the Odegaard one, you look for a reason as to that human reaction as to why they can't give it, and the potential that they feel that he may have slipped, for example, and that's the rationale. Obviously, I don't agree with that, and I think it's a penalty. But with this particular one, I can't give any reason as to how that isn't a foul. And that leads, I suppose, to agreeing with what you've just said to me.
Yeah, and, you know, I think Klopp made the point that anywhere else on the pitch, it's a foul, which is obviously a bit of a refrain in these moments, and you cannot argue with that in the slightest. The one thing with kind of sending the referees to the monitor is, I think we've created this sort of culture with VAR now where it's like, if they get sent to the monitor, they don't view it as a contentious decision, they view it as a mistake. So when people say sort of the ref should have been sent to the monitor, you know, I wish it was a scenario where the referee goes and he makes a decision for himself. Sending the referee to the monitor is tantamount to overturning the decision, which obviously would have been correct in this case. But I do think that, and I know it's a bit of a tangent, sort of in future, we need to try and move away with VAR. You know, the referee needs to be told, I think you should go and have another look at this. It's 50-50 or whatever. Not saying this one was, but just for future reference, really. And then the referee can sort of make that decision with the aid of the technology themselves. I think people would kind of prefer that a little bit, rather than just kind of the referee being said, here's why I think you're wrong, as they stare at the replay, which is obviously only going to lead to one outcome. So I'd like to see that as a change, but obviously it would take quite a long time for the way of thinking around it to actually be implemented. But anyway, on to the more positive notes. I mean, who were the standout players for you, Mark? I mean, it feels like we're going to be mentioning some names that we seem to mention virtually every week, given the form they've been in.
Yeah, probably. There was a really, you know, there was a lot of really good performances. I felt Alexis McAllister was fantastic. And I think in recent weeks, since obviously Alexander-Arnold hasn't been in the team, there's no doubt that Liverpool have tweaked the system in possession. It's very rare now that you sort of see one of them fullbacks stepping into midfield as often for the vast majority of the 90 minutes. And that's essentially allowed Alexis McAllister and Endo to play as sort of a two, which I believe suits Alexis better. I think when he sees the game in front of him, he's absolutely fantastic in picking out passes. I mean, early on in the season, he was actually quite sloppy in possession, giving away balls that I felt that he shouldn't, but so assured of his passing. And the way he steps in and presses the ball, I know we've talked about this a few times, but he's not the most physical player. He hasn't got the great athleticism, but his reading of the game and his ability to be able to read where the next play is going to move to step in his aggression then, actually, to win the ball and set Liverpool off on the next counter-attack. I felt it was a magnificent performance again from him. Obviously, culminating in a penalty, which was I felt was a really good penalty as well, considering the goalkeeper went the right way. But both in and out of possession, I thought his technical performance was excellent. Obviously, his partner Enzo alongside him, who just seems to me to get better and better, always makes the right decision. Assured in possession, moves it on correctly all the time, plays forward if he can. Harvey Elliott felt was absolutely everywhere, both in and out of possession, looking to pressurise the ball, looking to get on the ball and make things happen as well. And the shift he's put in recent weeks, Dave, I mean, the amount of minutes that he's actually played has been unbelievable for the side. I mean, obviously, they've lost Szoboszlai and Solari, were basically the right-hand side of the team, which has essentially put a lot of workloads on him to fulfil their minutes. But for me, just plays far beyond his years, the maturity within his game, the way he's able to keep the ball in the final third. But not only that, I was looking at his statistics, actually, but in terms of carries and forward passing, key passes, he's right up there. He's going to be an absolutely top player for Liverpool. And I know that it'll end up being the narrative that he has not taken the opportunities, and I think that's been one of the criticisms of Luis Diaz, obviously that sort of final end product. But I felt he was marvellous in that second half. I mean, everything that's good about him, retaining the ball in the final third, progressing Liverpool up the field of play, work rate out of possession. I mean, his movements to get in good areas, it's just a shame that he couldn't cap the performance with the goal that his overall performance deserved. And I think he's been absolutely outstanding in recent weeks. I really do. And his output's actually improved a lot as well. It was just a shame that today in them two big moments, he didn't take them. And finally, I'll just mention Van Dijk. I mean, we talk about him all the time, Dave, but I felt with that sort of inexperience that he had around him and sort of destabilisation of the players who were normally with him in that sort of unit of the pitch, if Virgil van Dijk doesn't play in that game and doesn't play for Liverpool in the last few weeks, Liverpool simply don't get the results that they've been able to obtain. And I've mentioned before, the best defensive player that I have seen play the game. And I think the big reason for that is people talk about different attributes you can have. I've mentioned about the way he ticks all the boxes in terms of the different attributes. But what really stands out for me when you talk about comparing them to other players, you normally get a centre-half who's good at defending either, who's an elite defender at defending high or defending low. He's the best at defending high and he's the best at defending low. If you want him to marshal his 18-yard box and be able to cope when the team are really suffering without the ball and be dominant inside that penalty area, he can. But at the same time, in terms of playing higher up the pitch, exposed to spacing behind, there's no one better as well. And I think, yeah, it's just unequivocal for me that he's the best defender who's played in the Premier League. For me, the best defender I've seen play football as an all-round package. But yeah, really good performances all round. Sorry I've gone on a bit there today, but I felt there was a few to mention today. I probably missed out one or two others, but they were the sort of standouts within the side for me.
Yeah, I mean, it is a day where a lot of players deserve a mention. I mean, you mentioned Diaz, very strange game for him in the sense that it will obviously be defined by those misses, but those last 10 minutes, it just seemed impossible to get the ball off him. It was unbelievable, some of the tenacity he was showing, and there was a real determination about him to kind of make up almost for those misses. And that run where he manages to hold on to the ball, I think he gets a corner out of it, and he's got Walker, who's one of the most difficult players to beat 1v1, whether that's, you think that's because of his pace or whatever it is, very few people get past him. And then Rodri, who's obviously, you know, the best defensive midfielder in the world. That I've never seen anything like that, honestly. And to be fair as well, the corner at the end just before the controversy, I think, is down to his, you know, relentlessness as well. So that, you know, I think credit to him for that. You know, I do think he should have scored today, definitely, and he should have been the match winner. But I do think that there's a point that comes where those moments have been and gone, and all you can do is give everything to try and impact the game positively from that point onwards, and it couldn't fault him in that regard. Interestingly, I think Mohamed Salah was really poor today, aside from a pass of the season contender through to Diaz. We almost wasted the one good moment that he provided within the game. And obviously, he's just coming back to fitness, so you can't really judge him too harshly for that. Yeah, the players I'd mention, quite a few you've already said, to be honest. Alexis McAllister, all I'll add on him is that I thought the penalty was sensational. Like, the placement of it, unsavable penalty after a delay of about 3 minutes, incredibly high-pressure situation. Phenomenal from him. Van Dijk, multiple big moments in this game. Key tackles on Foden in the first half. Clearance to stop Haaland heading in from close range. Really stepped up. I think, obviously, last time Liverpool played a title contender in Arsenal, had a really bad moment today. Redeemed himself for that, definitely. And there was obviously that incident where Haaland was running at him 1v1 and everything just seemed to sort of stop. And I think Carragher said in punditry that it felt like both players will claim a win from it, because Haaland got a shot off. But, you know, Haaland's shot was always at a very low percentage one. So I think Van Dijk would be very happy with how he dealt with that. Haaland actually comes away with 0.1 XG from this game, which is his joint second lowest tally of the season. So Liverpool have done very well to contain him today. Endo, 4 out of 5 duels won, 5 tackles and interceptions in that game. Getting better every week sums it up perfectly, I think, on that one, Mark. One player I just want to touch on is Jadon Kwanza as well. You know, we were both in agreement before this game that Klopp should have gone with Gomez at centre-back and Bradley at right-back. And when I ran a poll on Twitter, I said I was going to win in the last podcast after we heard about the Konate issue. I ran a poll saying, you know, what should the combination be? 2/3 of people agreed with us that it should have been Gomez in the middle and Bradley on the right. But how do you think he did today with this sort of vote of confidence from Klopp?
Yeah, we had the conversation, didn't we, Dave? I've been a bit worried in Kwanzaa's recent performances for Liverpool. I mean, first of all, I caveat that by saying, what a season the kid's had. I think he's been absolutely tremendous for Liverpool every time he's been asked to play. But I think there'd just been worrying signs for me in the last couple of performances that he'd had for Liverpool, that the level of physicality sometimes in terms of dealing with sort of them isolated moments, I felt that he's been got at once or twice. And Liverpool have been vulnerable because of that. And that for that reason, I was a little bit concerned. You can see that he's got all the potential to be a real top player. I mean, his ability on the ball, his calmness, all of that kind of thing. And I actually think he'll grow into his body in terms of his physicality and be a really dominant physical player as well. But you can see in sort of the rate of his development in terms of his physicality isn't yet there. And I felt that, you know, at times, often when he's caught in them sort of isolation moments in the channels, I've been a little bit concerned for him. And going into this game, when I seen the team lineup, I couldn't really understand the thought process from Klopp in not, for example, if Robertson wasn't fit, playing Tsimikas left back and allowing Joe Gomez, who's had success against Haaland with Van Dijk before, to play sort of that centre-half position with that greater experience. Now, what I'd say is I felt Kwanzaa did really well throughout the 90 minutes. However, he did make one really big error in the second half. And we could be talking a little bit differently about that if Foden's opportunity goes in. Keller ends up making a good save. But I think that was actually an in-possession error, something that he's normally really good at. So in terms of what I was initially concerned about him, in terms of managing the duels and managing maybe players in isolation, that didn't come to the forefront today. So really impressive on that side. Obviously, on the little mistake that he made, listen, that can happen in possession a little bit. He's normally very good. So I felt in general, sort of my concerns were not relevant, really. I didn't think that. And it was more testament against, I suppose, his progression.
Yeah, I think it's one of them where, like, he probably surpassed all expectations within that game, as he did this season, even with the error that he made. And I think obviously there was obviously a lot of concern and frustration with the absentees and stuff, but I thought both he and Bradley produced very commendable performances in this game, so credit to them again, and they've been huge players for Liverpool, especially in 2024. Very last question then before we finish, Mark. Liverpool, like I said before, nearly half the first 11 was out. Alisson unavailable, Trent, Konate, Curtis Jones, Mohamed Salah couldn't start, no Diogo Jota either. Of all the players who weren't available for this one, is there anyone you look at and say, if only they were in the team, Liverpool might have been walking away with the 3 points today?
It's a difficult one because Liverpool created multiple chances. So my initial answer would always be Trent Alexander-Arnold, because I think that he is the player who can simply provide sort of service that others can't. But I suppose if you're looking at the game today and potentially the chances that arose for Liverpool, and when you think of the the sort of clinicalness of, or lack of clinicalness of some of the finishes. I suppose you could mention Diogo Jota, I suppose, as the, because Liverpool have felt created enough without Alexander-Arnold. And Diogo Jota will be missed in the next few weeks. I think that Liverpool's sort of front three in Darwin Nunes, Luis Diaz, have been, them two in particular, have been really, really good in the last few weeks. I think they've been top-level performers. But I think that just with Gakpo at the moment, I know he only came on later in the game, Salah's obviously been injured. But I think that little difference, unless Gakpo is to up his game in terms of sort of being able to decide the outcome of games, could be where Diogo Jota's missed the most. And I think in this particular game, I'd say overall, obviously, Alexander-Arnold, but in this particular game, maybe sort of just for that clinicalness of finish, I'd probably say Diogo Jota.
Yeah, I think it, if you give Jota those 2-3 opportunities that Diaz had, then we're talking about a more positive outcome for Liverpool today. And that is just a reflection of how devastating he is in front of goal. And to be honest, I mean, I'm not going to dwell on that too much in the sense that before the game, it wasn't sort of, you know, the focus was, is Konate going to play? Is Salah going to start? You know, how will Kelleher do? Things like that. And then maybe Endo midfield as well. I wasn't sort of thinking too much about Jota. But it just sort of occurred to me after the game that, you know, what a miss he was in certain moments within that match, moments that could have been decisive. And hopefully he can still play a considerable part in the running, but we'll see how his injury recovery goes. But yeah, we'll leave it there for the match reaction. Thanks very much, Mark. Thanks very much, everyone, for listening. We've got all the relevant links in the episode description, including mine and Mark's Twitter, and also the podcast email address. So make sure you have a look at those if you're interested. And yeah, we'll be back in the week. Another couple of games Liverpool before the international break. They have the return against Sparta Prague, which is pretty much going to be a non-event, but I'm sure we'll get a good glimpse of a few young players and things like that. And then very much the opposite of a non-event at the weekend when they go to Old Trafford for the FA Cup quarterfinal. So make sure you stick with us for those two heading into that international break. But yeah, we'll leave it there for today's episode. Thanks very much again, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.